everybody. Welcome again to another edition of the Tradescast, a podcast dedicated to all things business entertainment. I'm Jeff Favre.
And I'm Michael Patterson, and welcome to the Tradescast for, boy, it's, I still keep on thinking that this year hasn't even started, and it's the last day of January.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's what happens when you get old, Mike. When you get old, time seems to go faster. So.
Oh God, I must be a geezer.
Well, if it's any consolation, I think that the January dump month for movies is going to last one more weekend. But we'll get to that in a minute. We're looking at the opposite end of the spectrum. We're looking at the movies that are considered the good movies. We are certainly going to be talking about this in the coming weeks, and we will be giving you the winning picks, because we are perfect about this, for your Oscar pools. But right now, we wanted to look briefly at the people who did not get the nominations, because the Golden Globes and SAG and WGA, those awards are pretty good prognosticators, but not always. And a few were off the list, Mike, and I thought we could each take turns picking ones that we thought were snubs and then see what the other person thinks about it. So why don't you go first? Tell me what you thought was the biggest snub of all the nominations.
Well, I'm going to pick the one that I think most people have talked about, which is Christopher Nolan not being nominated as Best Director. It's interesting because people just say that the difference between the Golden Globes and the Academy Awards is that True Grit is in play. So it's pushed some people, in and out. And, you know, it's funny because although I do like the Coen brothers, I don't think of them as being necessarily amazing cinematic directors. I think they're good, but it's interesting. I don't know how I feel about that, but I definitely think that was possibly the biggest snub.
Yeah, well, frankly, the Coen brothers ought to remove themselves from the list. They don't care if they get nominated or not. Right. And they get financing for their movies. Frankly, what was more important to them was how much more money this movie made than its $30 to $40 million budget, because it means more and more movies for them. Whatever little movie they want to make next, they're going to get to make. But I agree with you. This is going to be a mess for a while, or maybe forever, because it used to be the same number of directors and the same number of films. Now we have twice as many films. Usually one director was left off the list. Now it can be, obviously, it's several directors. And right. You know Christopher Nolan got left off the list because it's an action picture. But when you watch Inception, I mean, I don't know, agree with me or disagree with me, Mike, that movie did not look like a movie that everybody and his mom could direct.
No, I would say that it's one of these, directing, I wouldn't say masterpieces, but it's very, fine work, I would say. And, you know, the other thing is that when you, the Coen brothers even joke about their technique of shooting, that they'll literally put a camera on a tripod if they can and just shoot and act. You know, I would guess that you would say that they're more actor directors as opposed to kind of camera guys. But you know what? Now I'm saying that it's more important to be about, the cinematography, which is a different category. So, maybe when you factor everything in, this is just the way, it is. It is the way it is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You talk about the Coens, and Woody Allen used to fall into that category. He used to get nominated all the time, and we all know that pretty much he's about the story, turning the camera on, telling the actors to do whatever the hell they want, and then saying, cut, I got to go to a Knicks game, let's go. So, but I honestly believe that Christopher Nolan with this and Batman has proved to be a director who can marry action and drama and storytelling in a way that is not since The Matrix, which I think certainly deserved an Oscar nomination for directing. Not since The Matrix has a movie blown me away as much as Inception. And I think you picked the right one for the number one snub. Now, the one I'm going to pick, is Julianne Moore getting a lot of attention for an acting nomination for different awards, but she fell in that weird category, and we've discussed this before. Do you put her in Best Supporting Actress or Best Actress for The Kids Are All Right? Because you know Annette Bening is getting nominated. Do you put her in the category where she over excels or one where she's going to get a little lost? They put her in Best Actress. She got lost. She got knocked out. What do you think, snub?
Yeah, I guess. You know, it's always tough with the acting awards, because I always think there's far more rich acting out there. It's not always so obvious, and so I think that the field is always more crowded. And I do think it's a snub. I think it's but you know what? Who are you going to move out? That's the big problem. And you know, because you want to give. I know that a little bit of it is more politics of, oh, you want to make sure that this film gets in, so this person might get nominated for this category. But, you know, it's a tough group this year, and I think everybody that's nominated deserves it too. So,
well, you're right. Well, you give me your next snub.
Well, my next snub is one that seemingly nobody's talking about, at least on, like, the top 10 snub lists, is Waiting for Superman. It was, I think there were people literally thinking it was already going to win. You know, forget nomination. That was a given, but a win. And it didn't. And I got to be honest, I don't know all the documentaries. It's not uncommon for that to happen. But, you know, they did nominate some other good ones, but they also missed the Elliot Spitzer one, too. And I'm quite shocked, because even throughout the year, I wanted to bring up a documentary or two, and that I thought were shoo-ins for nominations. So I was really shocked about Waiting for Superman, maybe a little less with the Elliot Spitzer documentary.
Well, you know, Best Documentary for the Oscars is kind of like the Grammy Awards. Remember, for years in particular in the 80s and 90s, everyone made fun of the Grammy Awards because they were so out of touch. And we were supposed to have fixed this with Best Documentary nominations. We had some terrible snubs 7, 8 years ago, and we were supposed to fix this. And you are right. You've named the film that everyone has considered the most important documentary in the last 2 or 3 years, and a shoo-in, not just to get nominated, but to win. So this one is a very weird one, and I'm glad you mentioned it. I mean, this is the kind of stuff you get on the Tradescast. You don't get everywhere, and people have dropped the ball on this one, and I think that's a really important one for people to know about. And if you've missed it, you can see it. Get it on DVD, because that's definitely one that should have been at the very least nominated. Now, the one I'm going to pick, and one that when it came out, everyone was discussing, oh, yeah, definite nomination for picture, maybe for director, but The Town got the double snub for Ben Affleck and for the picture. And I think when you got 10 films, The Town is probably the best of that kind of gritty drama that I think any other year it gets nominated for Best Picture, no question. The critics love this film. Audiences love this film. How does this movie get overlooked?
Do you think it's Ben Affleck? Like that is the reason? I honestly didn't see the movie. It kind of escaped me. I really should before I forget about it. I'm wondering if it was just either the manner in which it was released or just that it's Ben Affleck. And even though, you know, there are people that like him, he also does have, you know, some people that joke about him. And I'm wondering if that could be the case. What do you think? I mean,
I think it's possible. It used to be that if you were an actor director, your cred went up. You know, we look at the Mel Gibson, Robert Redford, Kevin Costner, people who definitely got a kind of a bump up. It was almost like, well, hey, you can direct too. That's fantastic. And I think Ben Affleck has proved already with a couple of films that he knows what he's doing. He's not doing every project under the sun. He's carefully picking. But it is, as you know, it's very difficult to get nominated for a film if it gets released early. Now, if it's a huge action picture, Inception, or possibly, or Toy Story 3, something along those lines, But it used to be when there were five films nominated only, you would rarely get a film past the fall nominated. And this film was a little bit earlier than other films. But I honestly think that there was enough competition. It just got overlooked, which is, it's just one of those things. So that's a list of some snubs. There are definitely more. We would love to hear your biggest snub. If you've got one, tell us what it was. Email us at thetradescast@gmail.com or check us out on Facebook or twitter.com/thetradescast or give us a call. Let us know what you think was the big Oscar snub at 323-638-4763. Now, films that are definitely, Mike, never, ever, ever going to get nominated for anything came out this past week. And we were correct, or I was correct, saying that The Right would in the box office. I was wrong. The Mechanic came, well, basically in third, tied for third. You were right that the numbers were never going to get past the low teens. But what do you think with The Right and The Mechanic coming in at 15 million and about 11.5 million?
Well, you know, I think that everybody has to be somewhat disappointed here. When you get these low of box office numbers, I mean, I was skeptic on these movies. There obviously people weren't, though. When you get these types of numbers, you're not patting yourself on the back. And something like The Right, I mean, they were doing a lot of advanced advertising. I think that they thought they saw a window here that they could really do some, better box office. And I would say that they're disappointed. Yes, CBS Films and The Mechanic, I don't know whether they're happy about this because it's at least making some money or that they were expecting more. I just don't know with this studio. I don't know what they think. So,
well, Mike, as you and I have pointed out many times, CBS Films, new to this world of film distribution, making films, has not done well so far, and you and I joked that if The Mechanic fell on its ass, that we would have to really consider CBS Films to be so far an unmitigated failure. The Right suffered, and I know it's funny because it's a horror film, did not get good reviews. I think that Warner Brothers expected slightly better reviews. I certainly expected a box office of about 20 million. But, you know, the fact that The Mechanic could not come in a solid second ahead of No Strings Attached, which finished at about 13.5 million, and The Green Hornet, which it tied with, I just think CBS Films maybe has not figured out how to do this yet, because they are just – this looked like a property, and you mentioned this last week. And listen to our archives if you missed it. Mike, you mentioned how it was the only true action picture out at the moment. 11.5 million for this kind of action picture with Jason Statham, that's not good.
No, you're right. I you know, he's somebody that has slowly become bankable, and I got to, you know, I mean, action films are kind of tough because sometimes they're so bad they're bad, and sometimes they're, you know, they're bad but they're okay, you know, it's one of those things. And I'm just so cynical about CBS. So I will always go from a thought of weakness with their films, as opposed to whatever other nonsense, that factors into it. So, let's see what I wouldn't be surprised if this is a bad enough number that, that this streak is just keeps on going. They might just fold this company at some point. I don't know why they would stay alive, you know?
I don't either. I really don't. And I don't know how well what may save The Mechanic is the same thing that's going to, definitely saving Tron Legacy and may save The Green Hornet, and that is overseas numbers. The Green Hornet is not going to make its budget back domestically, but right now it's won the last 2 weeks internationally. And Tron has become a megastar overseas, basically ensuring a next movie because they're doing so big overseas. They're up into the 300 millions. So I think The Mechanic's got a shot there because I think Jason Statham's got some power overseas. The Dilemma, which has moved down to seventh, though, is definitely a Ron Howard failure. We called that one. And I think even though it's seven on the list, it could fall off next week with Yogi Bear, which is still in the top 10, because we've got two new films coming out. And this is very weird, Mike, because The Right is number one. It's a thriller horror film. And we've got two movies coming out that basically fall into that same category. The film I think that'll do bigger is The Roommate, which they've been pushing pretty hard. Looks pretty standard horror filmy. You think this film is going to unseat The Right and be at number one next week?
You know, I'm not exactly sure whether your guesstimation is correct. And the only reason I think that, I know that, you know, of these two films, one I've seen advertisements for, which is The Roommate, but the other one is The Sanctum. And it's being released by Universal as opposed to The Roommate, which is Screen Gems. And Screen Gems does not have as much clout. They might be you'd be surprised. I'm wondering if the theater numbers are going to be so far over into the Sanctum's realm.
I actually look. They're both at right around 2,700.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so you know, I could be wrong. I just wonder if The Roommate is. That people care about it, and we'll have to see. I don't know. The director's name is Christian Christensen, and he's from Denmark. And you know, I don't know all that much about him, which is kind of funny because it wasn't The Right. It was a foreign director as well.
Yes.
Yeah, and now there's another one, like a horror film of a guy that you know does not have much of a track record here. And we'll have to see. I'm not expecting anything big. The thing is that when you start to do the math on expectations, you start going like, well, it's got to make 10 million, and I don't know what else is not, you know, going to make money next week. So, yeah, when you look at like, you know, the 50% drop-offs and stuff like that, you're going to have some weird films possibly, you know, at number two or three, like with No Strings Attached and The King's Speech. It's going to be a weird frame next week, I can guarantee you.
Yeah, I actually think that we'll remember this week when we go back in that late November or December. This will be, if not the lowest box office weekend, it will be in the top five without question.
Yeah.
Because you're going to look at a winning number unless The Roommate does something crazy. But I don't see a Roommate going past 15 or Sanctum, either one of them. But let's say their numbers are lower, 10, 11 million. Then you could have a really incredibly low number one next week. And people will talk about it. And will it be Roommate? Will it be The Right? The Right. And if Sanctum and The Roommate and The Right are the top three, I can't tell you a time that there's been three horror movies in a row. You know, we have a Paranormal Activity and Saw, but three horror movies at 1, 2, 3, which is possible, I've never, ever seen it. And I cannot believe it's happening because the competition is just going to hurt all three of them because people are not that discerning when it comes to horror movies. They just want to see someone get slashed. So right. It's going to be a weird week, and it will absolutely help The King's Speech, and those movies that are still overproducing, The King's Speech and True Grit and Black Swan and The Fighter, which have been doing just fantastic numbers. So it's going to be a weird box office, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Let's turn to TV, and before we look at kind of the overview of where the season's going, who's gone, and who may be going soon, let's look at our champ. Our champ is back at 25 million and going strong, and that's Idol, which is into its second week. And to give us our Idol wrap-up, here's Gina.
Okay, so we're back for week two of Idol in Milwaukee and Nashville. So we can see the judges are settling into their roles, and a few things are becoming clear. One, Steven's going to be unintelligible many times. And the rest of the time, he's going to be creepy with the young girls. That's pretty clearly how that's going to play out for him. And it all makes for great TV. We love it. Keep it up, Steven. Jennifer is getting a little more comfortable saying no. You know, she's definitely the nice one. But she is getting more comfortable with that. And interestingly, she does not like to not be the prettiest girl in the room. I mean, she's visibly taken aback. It's pretty awesome. Randy, he's kind of angling to be the new Simon, but it's like his heart's not in it. He's trying, though. He's trying to be mean, but I don't think he really has it in him. So, contestants, some great early favorites were put through, including, who do we have? Molly DeWolf Swenson, who has too many names. She's a former beauty queen and current White House intern. She's really beautiful and tall and has a husky voice, so she was a clear, you know, clear winner to put through. Speaking of former beauty queens, there was another one that got through, Stormy Henley. Only this one couldn't sing at all. And she could sing a little. She wasn't great, but she was drop-dead gorgeous. And it was pretty clear why Randy and Steven put her through. Jennifer was, of course, not into her and gave her a no. She did not need that kind of beauty to be competing with her. We had Naima Adedapo. I'm not quite sure on how to say her last name. She's currently a groundskeeper maintenance worker, and she has this really great look and a great voice. And she's, you know, she's one of those contestants that are why this show is so great. You go from groundskeeper to star overnight. So watch, she's one to watch. And Lauren Elena, I mean, Steve, she was fantastic. And Steven Tyler basically crowned her the champ 2 weeks in. He basically said, she's the one that's going to win. They don't usually do that. The last time I remember it happening, actually, was Simon did it with none other than Carrie Underwood. So, of course, he was right. And who knows, Steven might say this 10 more times as we work through the auditions. And finally, another early favorite, the sob story of all sob stories, Chris Medina. You've probably even heard about it. It basically like made all the news channels. He's this great contestant and he has this beautiful voice. And we find out that he was engaged to be married. And then 2 months before his wedding, his fiance got in a horrible car accident and has severe brain damage. And he's stuck by her side. And they brought her in her wheelchair and all the judges came over and hugged her. I mean, it was like rip your heart out moment. Interestingly, he has the same hometown as last year's biggest sob story, Danny Gosey, whose wife, of course, had passed away. So I don't mean to make light of it. It was terribly tragic, but interesting stuff. And Idol, of course, secretly loves it. Okay, so the train rolls on next week. We will see you after Austin, Texas.
Thanks, Gina. And I would have to agree with a lot of what she said, in particular, Steven Tyler, who's getting a little, shall we say, randy with some of the younger women who show up. I don't know what's in that Coke glass, but I hope he's still clean and sober, because he's acting a little weird. But it's fun. It's good TV. So that, along with the sob stories, I think Idol is in for a big, big season. Now, some shows are not. They are limping along trying to get to May, and of course they're dreaming about being renewed for the fall. These shows are called bubble shows, and Mike, you and I look at bubble shows all the time, and there are some interesting ones, and I thought we'd look at a few of them today, and if I give you two, I want to know your thoughts on them. And the two that I thought, because you've followed these, are Chuck and Fringe. Do you think these shows are going to be back in the fall, or are they gone by May?
Well, I think with Chuck, every time I think this show is, you know, one foot in the grave, it gets renewed. I'm assuming it must have something to do with the fact that it's inexpensive. I really don't know. But it seems to have nine lives, and I would not be shocked if it's renewed. I wouldn't be shocked if it got canceled either. It's one of these things where it's tepid ratings, but, you know, maybe right now that's good enough. Fringe, on the other hand, I think from everything that I hear at Fox and with this move to Friday, that they're committed. It's just that, maybe they moved it to Friday just because there was less competition. Lower expectations, I guess, but the writing and everything is great. They just finished one big story arc. It looks like they're embarking on another, and I think it's a real quite exciting show. So
yeah, I think it depends a lot on networks. For example, I think CBS is pretty much going to stay pat. You know, they canceled Medium, but that was a show that had run its course. The Defenders has been on a list of being certain to be canceled. We'll see. But I think all of its bubble shows, its CSI shows, or even The Good Wife, which I don't think is on the bubble, I think all these shows come back. Why would CBS mess with what it's doing right now? NBC, on the other hand, they don't know whether to stick with the show or not. For example, their comedy block now on Thursdays. I think Community makes it. I think Outsource makes it to go along with The Office and 30 Rock and Parks and Recreation. And I think Perfect Couples goes. Would you agree with that thought?
I'm not sure how well Outsourced is doing. I guess it's doing good enough. And Perfect Couples, I don't know what the ratings are like. I actually watched Perfect Couples and didn't think it was as, excuse me, offensive as other people think. And I mean in an artistic sense. So I would not be surprised if one of Perfect Couples or Outsourced goes, because I think it's easy enough to replace it if it's not performing well. But I think that they might take a pass on tinkering there and maybe look at some other nights, because that, you know, yikes. There's a lot of work over at NBC.
Yeah, I think they're a mess. I think Parenthood is probably going to go because I think it's an expensive show to do. This week, Craig T. Nelson admitted that he was offered the role, the Ed O'Neill role on Modern Family, and turned it down because they didn't pay him enough. And so it leads me to believe that Parenthood is probably too expensive a show for what it's getting in the ratings. Same with The Event, which is why if it's not canceled, it's going to get canceled because they don't know what to do. And I think The Cape is going to fall into that as well. As we talked about The Cape, the numbers have continued to drop. They are a mess over there at NBC. I think they don't know what they're doing, but it is proof that on all of the big four networks, we're not talking about basic cable or even the CW, making a new hit this season seemed harder than ever. I mean, I'm thinking Blue Bloods and maybe nothing else is a legitimate new hit. Would you say that it's getting tougher and tougher to make a new hit?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said networks, because I think there were some, you know, new hits, definitely Walking Dead kind of pierced through. And I think that Boardwalk Empire, I think, you know, did good enough. It's just where are the hits coming from? And there's so much more competition, not just the actual shows on the dial, but you got to remember, you got to hire writers and stuff like that. And the same writers can't write everything. And there's some that now they're better at, say, an 8-episode series as opposed to 24 episodes on a network show. So, I think as it gets spread out, it becomes more and more obvious that it's harder for a network to make a hit. Because I think it's much more a sign of the times, competition.
Yeah, and you know, when you're riding high in the networks, it's easier to slot a new show. For example, the other hit is Hawaii 5-0. Hawaii 5-0 got slotted in on Monday, which was already a juggernaut day. And then they've moved Blue Bloods to Wednesday because they feel confident that they can put that in. CBS has, they're playing with house money, so to speak. ABC's got a couple of days like that. NBC's got nothing. You know, they basically made fun of themselves on 30 Rock the other day. And outside of the Biggest Loser, I mean, they joked out one of their biggest episodes of a season was guys on SVU watching American Idol. Yeah. because they just don't have anything. But I still hold out hope that NBC can turn it around. But it is definitely not this season. But we will watch these shows as they go in through to the spring and more sweeps, see if any of them can find a new audience, a bigger audience, or if they cut ties before the end of the season and try to put in some other shows. We'll also be checking on new shows. Mr. Sunshine's coming soon. I can't wait for that. We'll be looking at the box office, see if we actually have a trio of horror movies at the top, and if it truly is going to be one of the lowest box offices of the season. We'll be looking at more award shows and checking on the Oscar nominations and giving you predictions. We'll be checking on all things in the world of business entertainment. So for Mike Patterson, I'm Jeff Favre. Have a great day.